Welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part one of Why I'm Afraid of Bees by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. First off, I just want to give the warning on here that this is a kind of 18-plus deal. There will be bad language and sexually explicit jokes and drug references, and I am going to be intoxicated the entire time. So, you know, I just want to put that warning out there so people don't complain, you know. This isn't, hey, here's a direct audiobook of Goosebumps read by Dune Murderous. This is me. Being a douchebag. Chapter 1. If you're afraid of bees, I have to warn you, there are a lot of bees in this story. In fact, there are hundreds. Up until last month, I wasn't afraid of bees. Wait, that's pretty irrational. Everyone should be afraid of bees. They have fucking stingers. And when you read this story, you'll see why. I'm not afraid of sharks. I kick them right in the face. I'm not even afraid of cancer. I stare it right in the eyes. It all started in July when I heard a frightening buzz. The buzz of a bee. I sat up straight and searched all around, but I couldn't see any bees anywhere. The scary buzzing sound just wouldn't stop. In fact, it seemed to be getting louder. It's probably Andretti again, I told myself, ruining my day as usual. I'd been reading a stack of comic books under the big maple tree in my backyard. Other kids might have better things to do on a hot, sticky summer afternoon, like going to the pool with their friends. I can totally relate to you, protagonist in the story, because prior to doing this, I was listening to Giovanni's Get It On podcast while playing the online version of Magic the Gathering on Saturday evening. Oh, God, let's read some Goosebumps. But not me. My name is Gary Lutz, and I have to be honest, I don't have many real close friends. Even my 9-year-old sister Chrissy doesn't like me very much. My life is the pits. Why is that? I consistently ask myself. He's very Jewish, let's do it. Why is that? I constantly ask myself, what exactly is wrong with me? I apparently can't do Jewish, I didn't even... barely tried. Why do all the kids call me names like Lutz the Klutz? Why does everyone always make fun of me? Sometimes I think it might be because of the way I look. That morning, I'd spent a long time studying myself in the mirror. I'd stared at myself for at least half an hour. I saw a long, skinny face, a medium-sized nose, and straight, blonde hair. Not exactly handsome, but not terrible. Not incredibly beautiful like Dune from Dune Reads Goosebumps, always chilling with his little dog Franklin and his little cat Scarlet, who are both next to me right now. I can't stand that sound. And it was coming even closer. I flopped over on my stomach. Then I peered around the side of the maple tree. I wanted to get a better view of my neighbor's yard. Oh no, I thought. I was right. The buzzing sound was coming from Mr. Andretti's bees. Really? I don't know where a bee is, and your fucking next-door neighbor is a beekeeper? Come on, RL. And you already used that cheap thing of like, well, I'm not just going to describe how he looks. I'm going to say that he was staring at himself in the mirror this morning. Derp, 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 derp.
He's always hanging out in the back of his garage, messing with those bees of his. How could he handle them every day without worrying about getting stung? I asked myself. Didn't they give him the creeps? I thought you said you weren't afraid of bees. What is going on here? I climbed to my knees and edged a few inches forward. Even though I wanted to get a better look at Mr. Andretti, I didn't want him to see me. The last time he caught me watching him, he made a big deal of it. He acted as if there was some kind of log and sitting outside in your own backyard. What's this? He bellowed at the top of his lungs. Did someone start a neighborhood watch committee without informing me? Or is the FBI recruiting 10-year-old spies these days? This last remark really steamed me, because Mr. Andretti knows perfectly well that I'm 12 years old. After all, my family has lived next door to him for my entire life, which is bad luck for me, mainly since I'm afraid of bees.
Wait, let me go back to chapter 1 on this one.
up until last month, I was afraid of bees. Oh, fuck. I went on an entire tangent about, like, who's not afraid of bees? Who's not afraid of sharks? Herp, derp, derp. And now I look like a douchebag because I misread something. Ugh, maybe I should start over. No, I don't do things again. I don't go back when I make mistakes. Let's trudge on. Mainly since I'm afraid of bees. I might as well confess it right away. I'm scared of a few other things, too, such as dogs. Franklin, he doesn't mean you. Big mean kids, the dark, African Americans, loud noises, the clitoris, and swimming in the ocean. I'm even afraid, even scared of Klaus. That's Chrissy's dumb cat. But most of all, I'm scared of bees. Well, that's just completely rational. Unfortunately, with a beekeeper for a neighbor, there are always bees around. Hairy, crawly, buzzy, stingy bees. Was that a good impression, Scarlett? Nope, she just looks like she wants to kill me as per usual. I jumped up as Klaus the cat came creeping up behind me. Why do you have to stalk me like that? I cried. As I spoke, Klaus moved forward and wrapped himself around my leg. Then he dug his long, needle-sharp claws into my skin. Ouch! I screamed, get away from me! I cannot understand why Chrissy can love that creature so much. She says he only jumps on me because he likes me. Well, all I can say is that I don't like him, and I wish he would keep away from me. When I finally managed to chase Klaus away, I went back to studying my neighbor. Yes, I'm scared of bees, and I'm fascinated by them too. I can't seem to stop watching Mr. Andretti all the time. At least he keeps his hives in the screened-in area behind his garage. That makes me lose where I am. That makes me feel pretty safe, and he acts as if he knows what he's doing. In fact, he acts as if he's the world's greatest living expert on bees. Today, Mr. Andretti was wearing his usual bee outfit. It's a white shirt and hat with a wire screen veil hanging down to protect his face. His clothes are tied with string at the wrists and ankles. He looks like some kind of alien creature out of a horror movie. As my neighbor carefully opened and closed the drawer-like sections of his hanging eyes, I noticed he wasn't wearing any gloves. I just imagine that there's like a beekeeping special on and R.L. Stine was watching it and they're like, R.L., you need to have a book come out this week. And he's like, yeah, I got one. It's about fucking beekeeping. Yeah, that's it. Beekeeping. Let me save this. Once, when I was with my dad, Mr. Andretti had explained this to us. It's like this, Lutz, he said. Lutz is my father. Ken Lutz. Naturally, during this entire... Did I say Lutz before? Oh, that's gonna switch back and forth. I'm not gonna get that one right. Anyway, naturally, during this entire conversation, Mr. Andretti had acted as if it wasn't... if I wasn't even there. Your average beekeeper usually wears gloves, he explained. A lot of the brave ones use gloves with no fingertips and thumbs so they can work with the bees more easily. Mr. Andretti thumped himself on the chest and went on. But you're truly outstanding. But your truly outstanding beekeeper, such as myself, likes to work with his bare hands. My bees trust me, you know, Lutz. Bees are really a lot smarter than most people realize. Oh, sure, I said to myself. This is where I stop, because Kelly's home, and I'm gonna eat a motherfucking burrito that she asked for me. Burrito time, burrito time, getting drunk, eating burritos, burrito time! Goosebumps! Alright, after numerous attempts at getting back into this, I'm finally back. It's actually over a week later. I keep trying, I keep lying on Facebook saying I'm gonna get back on here, and I don't. Alright, anyway, drinking a White Russian, and good times. Oh, sure, I said to myself. If they're really so smart, why do they keep coming back to your hive and letting you steal all their honey from them? Bzzz. The humming from Mr. Andretti's hive suddenly grew louder and more threatening. I stood up and walked over to the fence between our two backyards. I gazed into the screened-in area to see what was going on. Then I gasped out loud. Mr. Andretti's white suit didn't appear white anymore. It had become black. Why? Because it was totally covered with bees. As I stared, more and more of the insects oozed out of the hives. They crawled all over Mr. Andretti's arms and chest, and even on his head. I was so grossed out, I thought I might puke. Mr. Andretti's hat and veil shimmered and bulged as if they were alive. Wasn't he scared of those little stingers? As I leaned over the fence, Andretti suddenly yelled at me, "Gary, look out!" I froze.
Huh?
"The bees!" Mr. Andretti screamed. "They're out of control! Run!" Chapter 2. Oh, God damn it, I'm only on Chapter 2. Do it for the kids, Dune. And by the kids, I mean to win the respect of Giovanni.
Chapter 2! I never ran so fast in my life. I charged across the yard and stumbled up the back steps of my house. I flung open the screen door and almost fell into the house. Then I stopped and leaned against the kitchen table, gasping for air. When I finally caught my breath, I listened hard.
Hmm? I guess I was about to make a sound for listening, and I realized there's not... That doesn't exist. It's not a thing.
I could still hear the angry buzzing of the bees from the yard next door. Then I heard something else.
Ha, ha, ha.
Somebody was laughing out there, and it sounded suspiciously like Mr. Andretti. Slowly, I turned around and peered out through the screen door. My neighbor was standing at the bottom of the back steps. He'd taken off his bee veil, and I could see that he had a huge grin on his stupid, fat, ugly, ugly, fat, stupid face.
Ha, ha.
You should have seen the expression on your face, Gary. You would never believe how funny you looked and the way you ran.
Yeah, picking on kids. That's pretty solid, Mr. Andretti.
I stared at him. You mean the bees weren't escaping? Mr. Andretti slapped his knee. Of course they weren't. I have complete control of those bees at all times. They come and go, bringing nectar and pollen back from the flowers. He paused to wipe some sweat off his forehead. Of course, sometimes I have to go out and recapture a few lost bees with my net. But most of them know my hives are really the best home they could possibly have.
Hold up, Scarlet wants to go out. And now she wants to go back in. I don't understand how anyone could possibly like cats more than dogs. I mean, I love that little thing, but goddamn, she's just annoying for the sake of being annoying.
So this was all a joke, Mr. Andretti. I tried to sound angry, but that's so hard to do when your voice is shaking even harder than your knees. It was supposed to be funny.
I guess that'll teach you to get a life and stop staring at me all day, he replied. Who talks to children like that?
Then he turned and walked away.
Then again, I talk to children by being like, hey kids, cunt, 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 goose, goose, bumps, do, 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 doon. So it's, you know, doesn't make it any better.
I was so angry. What a mean trick. It was bad enough having kids my age pick on me all the time, but now the grown-ups were starting in. I pounded my fist on the kitchen table just as my mother walked into the room. Hi, Gary, she said, frowning. Try not to destroy the furniture, okay? I was just about to make myself a sandwich. Would you like one?
I guess so, I muttered, sitting down at the table.
Would you like the usual?
I nodded. The usual
was peanut butter and jelly, which I never got tired of. For a snack, I usually like taco chips. The spicier, the better. Hey, Gary, you should have some Takis. And as I waited for my sandwich, I ripped open a new bag of chips and started chewing away.
Uh-oh.
Mom was rummaging through the refrigerator. I'm afraid we're out of jelly. Guess we'll have to use something else. She pulled out a small glass jar. How about this with your peanut butter?
What is it? I asked.
Honey.
Honey! I shrieked. No way!
Later, I was feeling lonely. I wandered over to the school playground. As I walked by the swing set, I saw a bunch of kids I knew from school. They were standing around on the softball diamond, choosing up sides for a game. I joined them. Maybe, just maybe, they'd let me play. Oh God, Gary is bumming me out.
Gail and I are captains, a boy named Louie was saying.
I walked over and stood at the edge of the group. I was just in time. One by one, Louie and Gale picked players for their teams. Every kid was chosen. Every kid except one, that is. I was left standing by myself next to home plate. Oh my God, this kid is how you make, like, school shooters. What the fuck? Let him play. You're gonna...
As I slumped to my shoulders and stared down at the ground, the captain started fighting over me.
"You take him, Gale," Louis said.
"No way! You take him!
Not fair! I always get stuck with Lutz."
As the two captains argued over who was going to be stuck with me, I could feel my face getting redder and redder. I wanted to leave, but then they would all have said I was a quitter. Finally, Gale sighed and rolled her eyes.
"Gale the snail, let's throw salt on her! Let's throw salt on her! I don't feel good about salting Gale the snail."
"Oh, all right," she said. "We'll take him, but remember the special Lutz rule. He gets 4 strikes before he's out."
Oh my god.
I swallowed hard and followed my teammates out onto the diamond. At that point, luck was with me. Gale sent me to outfield.
"Go way in the right, Lutz," Gale ordered. "By the back fence. Nobody ever hits it out there."
Some kids might be angry about being stuck so far away from the action, but I was grateful. If no balls were hit to me, I wouldn't have a chance to drop them the way I always did.
I don't understand why Steam tells me when people are playing games. That is annoying. I shut it off, but then I can't play my Magic the Gathering with Caleb.
As I watched the game, my stomach slowly tied itself into a tight knot. I was last in the batting order, but when my turn at the plate finally came around, the bases were loaded. I picked up the bat and wandered out toward the plate. A groan rose up from my teammates.
"Lutz is up!" Everybody cried in disbelief.
"Easy out," yelled the girl playing first base. "No better, no better, no better, no better, no better, no better, no better." Everybody on the team hooted and laughed.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Gale putting her face in her hands. I ground my teeth together and started praying.
"Please let me get a walk. Please let me get a walk. I knew I could never get a hit, so a walk was my only hope."
Of course, I struck out. 4 straight strikes.
"Lutz the klutz," I heard someone say.
Then a lot of kids laughed. Without looking back, I marched off the baseball diamond and away from the playground. I was heading home toward the peace and quiet of my own room. It might not be perfect, I thought, but at least at home no one teased me about being a klutz. Oh my god, this book is breaking my little cold, drunken heart.
"Hey, look, guys," a voice shouted as I turned onto my street.
"Hey, wow, it's Lutz, the klutz,"
someone else answered.
"Looking good, dude."
I couldn't believe my luck. The three voices belonged to the biggest, meanest, toughest creeps in the entire neighborhood. Barry, Marv, and Carl. They're my age, but at least 5 times bigger. I don't even think that's possible.
These guys are gorillas. Total gorilla juice heads. I mean, their knuckles drag on the sidewalk. And they're not swinging back and forth on a tire swing in their gorilla cage. What's their favorite activity?
Well, I don't think I might have read that one horribly.
You guessed it. Beating me up. "Give me a break, guys," I pleaded. "I'm having a bad day."
They laughed.
"You want a break, Lutz?" one of them shouted menacingly. "Here!"
I only had time to blink as I watched a huge, mean-looking fist headed right for my nose.
Oh my god, this book is just fucking with me.
A long, painful 10 minutes later, I walked through the back door of my house. Fortunately, my mom was somewhere upstairs. She didn't see my bloody nose, scratched and bruised arm, and torn shirt.
"R.L. Stein, what are you doing to me? This is getting serious. What, is he gonna get molested next? Like, I cannot handle this. This is too heavy. Let's just have a wacky fun time at camp." But then again, don't people get killed? Oh, whatever.
All I needed was for her to start fussing over me and threatening to call the other boys' parents. If that happened, Barry, Marv, and Carl would really kill me next time they saw me. As I crept up the stairs, Klaus the cat came leaping out at me.
I would be mad, Scarlet, if that wasn't perfect timing.
"Whoa!" I was so shocked I almost fell back down the stairs. "Get away from me, you monster!"
I pushed the cat away and hurried down the hall to the bathroom. I gazed into the mirror and almost heaved. I looked like roadkill. I rinsed off my nose with ice-cold water. Then I cleaned off all the blood and staggered to my room. I took off my ripped-up t-shirt and hid it behind my bed. Then I put on a winter shirt with long sleeves. It would be hot, but it would hide my scratched arms. Downstairs in the kitchen, I found Mom and Chrissy. Mom was getting out mixing bowls and eggs, and Chrissy was tying a big apron around her waist. Derp. As usual, Klaus was purring and wrapping himself around Chrissy's legs. Why did he act like such an innocent little kitten around her, and such a monster around me? Ugh, even the cat picks on him, RL. What are you doing? Hi, Gary, my mom said to me. You want to help us make peanut butter cookies? Lots of peanut butter used in that house. No thanks, I said, but I'll lick the bowl for you later. I walked over to the table and picked up the bag of taco chips I'd left there before. Well, at least you can help by getting the new jar of peanut butter out of the cupboard and opening it for me, Mom said. This recipe calls for a lot of peanut butter. Sounds good, I said, just so long as it doesn't have any honey in it. I opened the cupboard door and took out the peanut butter. I tried to twist off the cap. I twisted as hard as I could. This one has more typos than any book I've seen so far, by the way. Things like, I twisted as hard, period. And it's like, my cadence. But the top just wouldn't move. I banged the jar on the countertop and tried again. Still no luck. Do you have a wrench or something around, Mom? I asked. This thing will not budge. Maybe if you ran a hot water on it, my mother began. Oh, please, Chrissy said with a snort, wiping her hands in her apron. She crossed the room and grabbed the jar away from me. With two fingers, she twisted off the cap. Then she started laughing her head off. My mom started laughing, too. Can you believe it? My own mother was laughing at me. I guess you forgot to eat your oat bran this morning. Mom said like a total mom. I'm leaving, I muttered to Mom and Chrissy. Forever. The two of them were laughing together. I don't think they heard me. I totally miserable, I stepped out the front door and slammed it hard behind me. I decided to ride my bike around the block a few times. When I went around the side of the house and got out of the garage, I started to cheer up a little bit. My bike is really awesome. It's a new blue 21-speed, and it's real sleek and cool. My dad gave it to me for my 12th birthday. I jumped on my bike and headed down the driveway. As I turned on the street, I saw some girls walking down the sidewalk. Out of the corner of my eye, I recognized them. Wow, I thought. It's Judy Dormer and Caitlin Davis. Both Judy and Caitlin go to my school. They're really pretty and popular. To be honest, I've had a major crush on Judy since fourth grade. And once, at the fifth grade picnic, she actually smiled at me. At least, I think it was at me. So when I saw those girls walking down the street, I decided it was a good time to be really cool. So I lit up a cigarette. Yeah, that's refreshing. Hey, if any of you kids are listening, smoking makes you look cool as shit. I flipped my baseball cap around so the brim was at the back of my head. Then I folded my arms across my chest and started pedaling, no-handed. As I passed them, I glanced over my shoulder and flashed my most glamorous smile at Judy and Caitlin. Before my beautiful smile faded, I felt a tug at my sneaker. I realized instantly that my shoe was caught in the chain. A horrible grinding sound filled the air. The bike jerked and lurched from side to side. I lost control. Gary! I heard Judy shriek. Gary, look out for that car! What the hell? This is... Oh, God. Also, why am I drinking a milk-based drink while recording an audiobook? Stephen Fry doesn't do that. Oh, whatever.
Chapter 4.
I didn't see the lamppost until I hit it. As I toppled off my bike and shot sideways through the air, I heard the sound of metal crumpling, ripping, and shredding. I landed on my face in a deep, warm puddle of mud. I heard the car rumble past me. Slowly, I pulled my face out of the mud. I guess I didn't look too cool, I thought bitterly. Maybe at least I'll get a little sympathy. No way. I could hear Judy and Caitlin laughing behind me on the sidewalk. Nice bike, Gary! One of them called. They hurried away. I had never been so humiliated in all my life. If I could have, I would have put down roots in the middle of that mud puddle and turned myself into a tree. It might not be the most exciting life in the world, but at least no one laughs at a tree. I'm serious. At that moment, I would have happily traded lives with a tree, or a bird, or a bug, or just about any other living thing on the planet. With that sad thought, I decided to get myself up and out of there before anything else
before anyone else came along. It took all my strength to peel my wrecked bicycle off the lamppost. Luckily, I didn't have to drag it far. For the second time in the same afternoon, I crept into my house and up the stairs so I could clean up before anyone saw me. Now, as I studied my reflection in the bathroom mirror, I saw there was no way I could hide all the cuts and scrapes from my mom. "Oh, who gives a fuck?" I moaned as I washed the blood off my face and hands. "Who gives a fuck if mom sees them? I'll be doing her a favor by giving her something else to fucking laugh at, that bitch. I'll really make her stupid fucking day." I went back into my room and changed into my last clean shirt. Then I glanced around, trying to find something to do. I decided to boot up my computer. Playing with my computer is one of the few things I really like. When I'm lost in the world of a computer game, sometimes I can actually forget I'm a total jerk named Gary Lutz. Nobody in a computer game ever calls me Lutz the Klutz. Oh god, this is bumming me out. I turned on the computer and decided to have another try at the Planet Monstro Fantasy game I'd been stuck on for 2 days. Monstro was a really cool game. It says COD game, but I assume it's not about making fish and chips. When you play it, you're a character named The Warrior, and you're trapped on the planet Monstro. You have to get yourself out of all kinds of scary situations. Before I started to play, I thought I'd check Computer Note, one of the electronic bulletin boards I'm connected to on the computer. I left a message on there Monday asking if anyone knew how to defeat the two-headed dragon that kept eating me on the 13th moon of Monstro. Sometimes other people in the country who are playing the same game will send other helpful hints. When I accessed Computer Note, I saw the following computer game-related message on the screen. To Arnold in Milwaukee, have you tried rubbing... Okay, have you tried rubbing smashed-up eucalyptus leaves all over yourself in the rainforest game? It's an ecologically correct way of repelling the poisonous ants in EcoScare 95. From Lisa in San Francisco, to R from Sacramento. The only way to escape from the flood on your spaceship in Space Quest, oh god, I love Space Quest, is to inflate your suit and float away. Are all these games real? I only obviously played Space Quest, whatever. From L in St. Louis to Gary in Millville. Try stabbing the dragon between the eyes. It worked for me. From Ted in Ithaca. Oh, terrific, I thought. I'd been trying to stab the dragon between the eyes, but the creature always ate me before I could do it. What was Ted in Ithaca doing that I wasn't? I decided to leave another electronic note asking Ted to explain what he meant. But as I started typing, I noticed another message at the very bottom of the computer screen. I read it. Then I read it again, very carefully. Take a vacation from yourself. Change places with someone for a week.
Chapter
5.
What could that mean? I pressed the enter button so I could read what was next. I desperately wanted more information about the message. This is what I saw. Take a vacation from yourself. Change places with someone for a week. Person-to-person vacations. 113 Roach Street, Suite 2B. Or call 1-800-555-SWAP. How could it possibly work? I asked myself. How could two people change lives without getting in all kinds of trouble? Who gets you in trouble? Is that the Ministry of Magic, huh? Is Fudge gonna come around? Am I right? I had to admit it sounded totally crazy. Crazy, but interesting. I yawned and scratched the back of my head. Ouch! My head grazed one of my painful bumps I'd gotten from Barry, Marv, or Carl. It really hurt, but the stab of pain helped me make up my mind. I was definitely ready for some changes in my life. I don't want to spend the rest of my life getting beat up, I told myself, or crashing into lampposts either, or being the last one chosen for the team. I took out a piece of paper and copied the address from the screen. As I did, I realized it was only a few blocks from my school. I knew just where it was. I could stop by the person-to-person office the next day. I'm gonna check it out, I decided, making up my mind that... like that. Oh my god, come on, Dan. Making up my mind like that improved my mood a lot. I was beginning to feel almost cheerful when I went back downstairs, but not for long. When my family finally sat down in the dining room for dinner, my father noticed my banged-up face.
Gary, he exclaimed, what in the world happened to you?
I said. I had a little accident on my bike.
I winced as I said the word bike. I was thinking about the mangled wreck in the corner of the garage.
I don't believe that for 1 minute, Mom said. I'm sure you've been fighting with those big kids in the neighborhood again. Why in the world can't you children learn to settle your disagreements peacefully?
Chrissy started laughing so hard, she almost choked on her tuna casserole. Like she'd be doing for years in college, dyke.
Gary doesn't have any disagreements with those guys, Mom, she said. They just like to beat him up.
My mother shook her head angrily.
Well, I think that's just outrageous, she said. I have a good mind to call those boys' parents up right now and give them a piece of my mind.
I groaned loudly. I'm telling you, Mom, I had really had an accident with my bike. If you don't believe me, go check it out in the garage. My family didn't believe me. Then my father didn't believe me. He started lecturing me about bike safety and why I should have been wearing my helmet and how I was going to pay to have the bike fixed with my own money. After a while, I stopped paying much attention. As I pushed my casserole around my plate, all I could think about was my plan for changing my life with person-to-person vacations. The sooner, the better, I thought. The sooner I get out of this life, the better off I'll be. We finished dinner and I went upstairs to play on my computer again. I spent the rest of the evening playing Planet Monstro. I kept trying to stab the dragon between the eyes, but even though I followed Ted from Ithaca's advice, I couldn't do it. The dragon ate me 23 times. Finally, I gave up and crawled into bed. Christian Cathy is now playing Counter-Strike Source. I was so wiped out, I started drifting off to sleep almost right away. I turned over and pulled the blanket up to my chin. I curled up in a ball. The toes on my right foot touched something.
Huh?
I said out loud.
What is that down there?
My heart pounding in my chest. Slowly, I moved my toes again.
Oh!
My blood turned to ice. I jumped out of bed and let out a blood-curdling scream.
Ah! Chapter 6!
Frantically, I ripped the blankets off my bed. In the dim light coming through the window, I could see that the rat, fat and hairy, its red eyes gleaming at me. I screamed again. Then I heard laughter down the hall. Chrissy's laughter. My stomach sank. I made my way to the switch and turned on the light. Sure enough, the rat still stared at me at my bed, but now I recognized it. A gray rubber rat. One of Klaus's favorite toys. In her room down the hall, Chrissy squealed with laughter.
I'm gonna get you, you little brat, I screamed.
I thought about going down the hall and really thumping her, but I quickly decided against it. Even though Chrissy is only 9, she happens to be pretty strong. That was your reasoning, Gary? There was an excellent chance she could beat me up. With an angry growl, I grabbed the rat off my bed and heaved it into the corner of my room. Then, my heart still pounding with rage, I turned off the light and climbed back under the covers. Gary is like the okay rage face. Like, that's just what he looks like to me. Tomorrow, I promised myself in the dark room, tomorrow you, Gary Lutz, are going to check out that ad and find out if you can change your life, even if it's only for a week. It has to be better than this miserable life you have now. The next day, I kept my promise to myself. After breakfast, I walked the 6 blocks to Roach Street and started reading the street numbers, trying to find number 113. I guess I was looking for some kind of big glass office building, but when I finally found 113, it was a small gray building that looked something like my dentist's office. A little sign on the outside read, Person-to-Person Vacations, Suite 2B. I opened the door and walked up a flight of steps. At the top, I opened another door and went into a kind of waiting room with beige carpeting and tan leather chairs. A dark-haired woman sat behind a big glass window. She smiled at me when I came in, and I walked over to talk to her.
Good afternoon, she said into a microphone.
I jumped. Even though the woman was right in front of me, her voice came out through the speakers.
I stammered nervously. I came about the message on the electronic bulletin board. Oh, yes, the woman replied with another smile. A lot of people learn about us from their computers. Pardon me for staying behind this glass shield, but the equipment behind me is delicate, so we have to be very careful about protecting it.
I peered over the woman's shoulder. I could see gleaming metal counters and a wall of electronic equipment, including what appeared to be a heart monitors, video screens, x-ray machines, and cameras.
It looked like something right out of Star Trek!
I suddenly had a heavy feeling in my stomach. Maybe this is a bad idea, I thought.
You probably don't like kids hanging around here, I stammered.
I started backing away toward the door.
Not true, she said. Many of our customers are young people such as you. A lot of kids are interested in changing places with someone else for a week. What did you say your name was?
Gary. Gary Lutz.
Nice to meet you, Gary. My name is Miss Carmen. How old are you? About 12.
I nodded.
Come on over here for a minute.
Miss Carmen said, do I have to make the sound? It really hurts. Motioning with her hand, cautiously, I walked back over to the glass booth. She opened a little slot at the bottom of her window and pushed out a book. I picked it up and saw that it was a photo album, like the one my parents have for their wedding. I opened it and stared, looking through it.
It's kids, I exclaimed, all about my age. Correct, said Miss Carmen. They're all interested in switching lives with someone else for a week.
Wow. I studied the album. A lot of the kids in the pictures looked big and strong and cool. Kids like that wouldn't be afraid of anything, I told myself. I wondered what it would be like to be like one of them.
You could pick a boy, or even a girl for that matter, to trade places with for a week, Miss Carmen was saying.
Hey, trade places with a girl at 12. I am a horrible person.
But how does it work? I asked. Do I just go take over someone's room and live in their house for a week? Go to his school and wear his clothes? The woman laughed. It's far more interesting than that, Gary. With our getaway vacations, you will actually become the other person for a week.
Huh?
What we have, the woman explained, is a safe and painless way to switch one person's mind into another person's body. So while you'll know you're really you, no one else will recognize you, not even the other boy's parents.
I was still confused. But what about my body? What are these changes going on with it?
There's hair where there wasn't hair before.
Does it just get stored here?
This is her talking. I'm not doing that voice anymore.
No. We here at Person to Person will find someone else to take over your body for the week. Your parents will never even know you're gone. I looked down at my skinny body and wondered who would possibly want to borrow it for a week. Miss Carmen leaned forward in her chair. So what do you say? Are you interested, Gary? I stared at her dark brown eyes and swallowed hard. I broke into a cold sweat. This whole thing was really weird and scary. I said, I don't know. I mean, I'm just not sure.
Don't feel bad, Miss Carmen said. Many people take some time to get used to the idea of a body switch. You think it over for as long as you wish.
She took out a small camera. But in the meantime, would you mind if I took your picture? That way we could find out if anyone is interested in being in your body for a week.
Well, I guess that's okay, I replied.
She snapped the picture and the flash went off in front of my eyes. But I'm still not sure I want to go through with it.
There's no obligation, Miss Carmen said. Why don't we leave it this way? You fill out a form describing yourself, then I'll put your picture into your display album, and when we find someone to take your place, I'll call you and see if you've made up your mind.
Okay, I replied. What harm could that do? I asked myself. There was no way she would ever find anybody who would want my body for a week. This is really bumming me out. I spent a few minutes filling out the form. I had to write down my name and address. Then I had to tell all about my hobbies and how well I did in school and things like that. When I was finished, I handed it to Miss Carmen, said goodbye, and headed out the door. I made it most of the way home without getting into trouble. A block and a half from my house, I ran into my three most favorite people.
Also unfavorite in the world. Barry, Marv, and Carl.
Hey guys, Barry cried with an ugly smile. The klutz is up and walking around. That must mean we didn't do a very good job of pounding him yesterday.
No, I insisted. You did a great job. You did a very, very good job, guys. I guess they didn't believe me. They all jumped on me at once. When they were finally finished, about 5 minutes later, I lay on the ground and watched them walk away with through one swollen black eye. What the hell? Have a nice day, Marv called back to me. All three of them roared with laughter. I sat up and pounded the ground with my fists. I'm sick of this, I wailed. I want to be someone else, anybody else. Slowly and painfully, I dragged myself to my feet. I'm doing it, I decided. And nobody is going to stop me. Tomorrow I'm going to call person-to-person vacations, and I want them to put me into someone else's body as soon as they can.
Chapter 7.
I spent the next few days changing my band-aids and hoping the woman from person-to-person vacations would call me. At first, I ran to answer the phone every time it rang, but of course it was never for me. Usually it was one of Chrissy's dumb friends wanting to giggle and gossip. One afternoon, I was reading a science fiction book in my usual spot behind the big maple tree. I heard a sound, and peering around from behind the tree, sure enough, there was Mr. Andretti walking across the lawn. He was dressed in his beekeeping outfit. As I watched, Mr. Andretti went to the screened-in area off the garage and started opening up the little doors to the beehives. I covered my ears. I couldn't shut out the loud, droning hum. How I hated that sound. It was just so frightening. I shivered and decided it was time to go back inside. As I climbed to my feet, a bullet-sized object shot right by my nose. A bee! Were the bees escaping for real this time? I gasped and stared over at Mr. Andretti's house. Then I almost choked. There was a big hole in the screen around the beekeeping area. A lot of bees were flying out. Ow! I cried as a bee landed on the side of my head and buzzed loudly into my ear. Frantically, I batted away. Then I ran toward my house. For one moment, I thought about calling the police, or maybe even the paramedics. But as I slammed the back door, I heard an all-too-familiar sound. Ha ha ha. Once again, Mr. Andretti was laughing at me. What a douche. I pounded my fist into my other hand. Oh, how I'd like to sock that guy in the nose, I thought. I was interrupted by the sound of the phone ringing. Give me a break, I cried as I stomped off to answer it. Don't Chrissy's moron friends have anything better to do than talk on the phone all day? What do you want? I snarled at the mouthpiece. Is this Gary? A woman's voice asked. Gary Lutz? Yeah, I answered in surprise. I'm Gary. Hi, Gary. This is Miss Carmen from Person to Person Vacations. Remember me? My heart started thumping in my chest. Yes, I remember, I answered. Well, if you're interested, we found a match for you. A match? Correct, said Miss Carmen. We found a boy who wants to switch bodies with you for a week. Are you interested? I hesitated for a few seconds, but then, as I gazed out the back door of the kitchen, I saw a big fat bee throwing itself against the outside screen door. Ah, ah, Mr. Andretti's scornful laughter boomed across the backyard. My mouth tightened into a thin line. Yes, I said firmly. I'm really interested. When can we make the switch? Why, we could do it now, said Miss Carmen, if that's all right with you. My pulse raced as I thought. My parents were both out for the afternoon, and Chrissy was playing at a friend's house. The timing was perfect. I'd never get a chance like this. Now is great, I exclaimed. Terrific, Gary. It will take me about 20 minutes to get to your house. I'll be waiting. The next 20 minutes seemed to take forever. While I waited, I paced back and forth in the living room, wondering what my new body would be like. What would my new parents be like? My house? My clothes? Would I actually have some friends this time around? By the time Miss Carmen arrived, I was a wreck. When the doorbell rang, my hand was sweating so much I could barely turn the knob to let her in. Wow, this is like young Charlie Kelly. This is the same episode where he has like the hornets in the box and stuff, and he's going on the date and he's all sweaty. I'm a full-on rapist. You know that? Whatever. Let's go in the kitchen, Miss Carmen suggested. I like to set up my equipment on a table. She opened a small case and took out some black boxes with monitors on them. I showed her the way to the kitchen. So who's this kid who wants to switch places with me? I asked. His name is Dirk Davis. Dirk Davis, I thought excitedly. Even his name sounds cool. Someone needs to name their kid Dirk Davis. That is badass. What does he look like? Miss Carmen opened up a white photo album. Here's his picture, she said, passing it to me. I looked down at the picture of a tall, athletic-looking blonde boy in black Lycra bike shorts and a blue muscle shirt. What? Yeah, that's getting weird. I blinked in surprise. He looks like a surfer or something, I cried. Why in the world does he want to switch bodies with me? Is this some kind of trick? Miss Carmen smiled. Well, to be honest, it's not exactly like your body he's interested in, Gary. He wants your mind. You see, Dirk needs someone who's good at math. He has some very hard math tests coming up in summer school. He wants you to take them for him. My phone's doing stuff. Oh, I said. I felt relieved. Well, I usually do pretty well on math tests.
We know that, Gary. Person to person does its homework. You're very good at math. Dirk's good at skateboarding.
I sat down at the table. A bee buzzed right under my nose.
Hey! I yelled, jumping back up. How'd that bee get in here?
Miss Carmen glanced up from her equipment.
Your back door is open just a bit.
Now please, sit down and try to relax. I need to fasten the strap around your wrist.
With a nervous glance at the back door, I sat back down. Miss Carmen strapped a black band around my wrist. Then she stared, fiddling with some of the wires attached to one of her machines.
So, I thought your mind just switched bodies with someone. You don't get your mental skills and stuff. That doesn't seem to make sense. It seemed to go against their sales pitch on this. Whatever.
All right, back again. I just recorded the worst podcast that I've ever been on, and I really hope it doesn't see the light of day. It was a Comics Online podcast, but our planned guest was Aussie Dave, who was an awesome guy from Australia who came out by himself to go to Comic-Con that we met while doing a live podcast during Comic-Con with a crowd and stuff, and but he apparently couldn't make it all of a sudden, so the last-minute replacement was Crows is... friends who were just too whiny, annoying, just awful cunts, and it just went horribly, and I'm bummed, and it was just a waste of my time, and I could have been doing Goosebumps, so I really hope that none of you ever have any reason to hear it. Anyway, then she started fiddling with some of the wires attached to one of her machines. Another bee flew in front of me, and I wiggled around in my chair. Please sit still, Gary, otherwise the computer won't work.
Who can sit still with all these bees buzzing around in here? I asked.
I lowered my eyes and saw three fat bees walking across the table. Bzz, bzz, bzz. Bzz, bzz, bzz. Burr, burr, burr. That was three different bees sounds.
Another bee flew past my right eye. Bzz.
What's with these bees? I was starting to panic.
Don't pay any attention to them, Miss Carmen said, and they won't bother you.
She made one more adjustment to her machine. Besides, Dirk Davis isn't afraid of bees, and as soon as I flip this switch, you won't be either. But zap!
A blinding white light flashed in front of my eyes. I tried to cry out, but my breath caught in my throat. The light grew brighter, brighter, and then I sank into a deep pool of blackness.
Chapter 8!
I'm now drinking a big-ass glass of water because I've been talking for the last, like, 4 hours straight, and a glass of Cabernet Sauvignon. Anyway,
Chapter 8!
Something was wrong. Colors returned, but they were a total blur. I struggled to make everything come clear, but I couldn't seem to focus on anything. My new body didn't feel right either. I was laying on my back, and I felt light as a feather. Light enough to float away. Could this be Dirk Davis's tall, muscular body? It certainly didn't feel like it. Was this some kind of trick? I asked myself. Was the picture of Dirk Davis a phony? Was he really a lot smaller than he looked in the photo album? I reached out one of my hands and tried to touch my stomach, but my hand felt really weird, too. It was small, and my arm seemed to be bending in several places at once.
What's going on? I wondered, trembling with fright.
Why do I feel so weird?
Whoa!
I cried out as I finally managed to touch my body.
Yuck!
My skin was soft and it was covered with a fine layer of fuzz.
Help, Miss Carmen! Help! Something's wrong!
I tried to shout, but there was something wrong with my voice. It came out all tiny and squeaky. Little mouse squeaks. I rolled over on my stomach and tried to get up. I spread my arms to balance myself. I gasped as I realized my feet weren't even touching the ground.
I was flying.
What happened to me? I cried in a squeaky little voice. I floated forward and crashed into a kitchen cupboard.
Ow, help me!
I moved my strange new arms and realized I had some control over which way I flew. I felt some weird muscles in my back going into action. Testing my new muscles, I flew over to the kitchen window. Exhausted, I landed on the sill. I turned my head to one side, then I gasped in fright.
A hideous monster was reflected in the window glass. Ah, hideous monster!
The creature had two huge glaring eyes, and it was staring right at me. I tried to scream, but I was too terrified to utter a sound.
I have to get away, I decided.
I moved my feet and started to run. The monster in the glass ran too. I stopped and stared at the window glass. The monster stopped and stared back at me.
Oh no.
Please, no, I cried. Please don't let it be true. I reached up and tried to cover my eyes. The creature in the window did the same thing, and suddenly I knew the hideous truth. The monster in the mirror. It was me. Miss Carmen had messed up, totally, and now I was trapped inside the body of a bee.
Wow, R.L. Stein was really banking on the fact that no kid had ever seen the fly, wasn't he?
Chapter 9. I don't know how long I stood there. I couldn't stop staring at my reflection. I kept waiting to come out of this nightmare. I kept waiting to blink my eyes and find myself in Dirk Davis's big, muscular body. But I didn't look at all like Dirk Davis. I had two giant eyes, one on either side of my head and two skinny little antennas sticking out my forehead. My mouth was truly disgusting. I had some kind of a long tongue, which I soon discovered I could move all around and impress the ladies. Oh, sorry, move all around and make longer and shorter if I wanted to impress the ladies, which I didn't. My body was covered with thick black hair. I had three legs on either side of my body, and let's not forget the wings sticking out of my shoulders. This is the pits. They say that a lot. I cried, I'm a bug. I'm a disgusting hairy bug. Miss Carmen, something went wrong. Help me.
When did I turn into, Gary Coleman from Different Strokes?
This is disgusting. Bah, 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 bah. Creak slam. What was that? Oh, no. I realized that Miss Carmen had just gone out the kitchen door. No, wait, wait, I squeaked. She was my only hope. I had to catch her. I had to tell her what had happened. Miss Carmen, I squeaked. Miss Carmen. Frantically, I flew out of the kitchen and into the living room. Out the window, I could see her car still parked in front of the house. But the front door to the outside was shut, and bees can't open doors. And bees can't open doors. I was trapped in my own house. The back door, I remembered. Miss Carmen had said it was open just a bit. Yes, that was how all the bees got in the house in the first place. I fluttered my new wings and flew back into the kitchen. As I soared, I realized I was getting more and more control over my flight pattern. But I didn't care about that right now. All I knew was that I had to get to Miss Carmen before she drove away. I darted out the tiny opening in the back door. Miss Carmen! I shouted as I flew out the side of the house. Miss Carmen, help me! You messed up! I'm a bee! Help me! My voice was so tiny. You know what? I'd rather be trapped as a bee than trapped on bee. That is a 4chan joke. Derp, derp, derp. My voice was so tiny she couldn't hear me. She opened her car door and started to climb behind the wheel. My only chance for normal life was about to drive away. What could I do? How could I get her attention? Thinking quickly, I flew right toward her. Miss Carmen, I shouted in her ear. It's me, Gary. Miss Carmen uttered a startled cry. Then she drew back her hand and swatted at me hard. Ow! My entire body vibrated with pain. The force of her swat sent me falling to the street. I hit the pavement with a painful splat. I shook my head, trying to clear my eyes. That's when I realized I had an extra set of tiny eyes arranged in the kind of triangle on the top of my head. I used them to gaze straight up, and then I screamed in terror. I saw the tire rolling toward me. Miss Carmen was about to drive right over me. I was about to be squashed like the bug that I was.
Chapter 10.
Oh, I froze in panic. Even with my blurred bee vision, I could see the deep treads in the tire as it rolled closer, steadily towards me. Closer, closer. I have to move, I told myself. Fly away, fly away, fly away like R. Kelly. But in my panic, I forgot how to use my new muscles. I'm going to be squashed, I realized. I uttered a final weak cry and the car stopped. Huh? My entire body was trembling, but somehow I managed to pull myself up into the air. Yes, I was flying now. I could see Miss Carmen inside the car. She was fastening her seatbelt. She had stopped the car to put on her seatbelt like people don't do. Hey, seatbelts really do save lives, I told myself. Hey, seatbelts really do. I called out to her, but of course she couldn't hear me. I watched the car roll away until it was a blur of color. Then, exhausted and terrified, I buzzed over to a nearby lilac bush and dropped onto the leaf.
That was so close, I told myself in between gasps for air. I'm gonna get killed out here. A green caterpillar inched its way up onto a nearby stem and started chewing noisily on the leaf I was resting on. I'd never really examined a caterpillar before. Up close, they're real ugly. They look a bit like dragons, only scarier.
Uh-oh. Now it's going to turn into Starship Troopers.
Keep away from me, I yelled in my tiny voice. The caterpillar didn't even turn its stupid head. Maybe it didn't hear me. I forgot all about the caterpillar when I heard footsteps coming up the front walk. I turned my head and used my sideways eye to see who it was. Mom! I screamed, Mom, over here! She couldn't hear me. She hurried up the steps and into the house. Suddenly, I was overcome by a wave of sadness. My own mother didn't recognize me. Desperately, I fluttered my wings and flew away from the leaf. I made my way to the front of the house and started buzzing around the front windows. I had my wings under complete control now, but the scene I saw inside the house was enough to make me fall onto the ground again. My mother stood up in the living room talking to me, or at least, that's what she thought. Only I knew it couldn't be me. I was stuck outside.
But who was in there with... The typo says, but who wets in there with my mom? Which is very, very strange.
But who was in there with my mom? Had Dirk Davis managed to get inside my body? I landed on the ledge and stared out into the house. My mom was talking. The boy was nodding and laughing. He said something to her. If I stared closely, I could read his lips. Hey, did you buy taco chips? I'm really starving, Mom. That had to be Dirk talking inside my body. My mom smiled at him and patted him on the arm. I read his lips and saw that he was calling her Mom again. How could he do that? How could he call my mother Mom? If bees could cry, which I know now they can't, I would have started bawling right then and there. Who did that boy think he was, for that matter? What kind of mom did I have, who couldn't even tell that a total stranger was living inside her own son's body?
That's puberty for you, am I right? Yeah, once again, I'm right.
As I watched myself and my mom chatting in the living room, I totally lost it. Like a crazed maniac, I started bashing my insect body into the window. Bzzz, I cried. Bzzz, bzzz, bzzz. It's me, Gary. Bzzz, look out here. Help me. Bzzz, bzzz. Again and again, I smashed myself up against the glass, but no one inside the house noticed. After a few minutes, my mom brought the new bag of taco chips. I watched Gary rip the bag open and take out a handful of chips. Crumbs fell on the living room carpet as he crunched the spicy chips. I realized I was starving. But what a bees eat, I asked myself. Desperately, I tried to remember everything I'd read about the creatures. I thought of the hungry caterpillar crunching away on the leaf, but I was almost positive bees didn't eat leaves. But what did they eat? Other bugs? Ugh! The thought made me shudder. I'd die before I'd eat a bug. Meh.
It's not what they say in Africa, you know, right, Gary? Be a little more respectful.
I buzzed around the yard, hoping to see something, anything, I could use for food. As I flew, I found that I was getting used to my strange new vision and learning how to work my different sets of eyes. I remembered something I'd once read in an old picture book called The Big Book of Bees. It said that bee eyes have thousands of tiny lenses crowded together, but because they don't have pupils, they can't really focus their eyes. Interesting, I thought, but not very helpful. If I could remember about bees' eyesight, why couldn't I remember what they ate? I settled into another bush to think. Suddenly I became aware of a wonderful odor nearby. I turned my head and saw a beautiful yellow flower. How fucking high were you?
If I edited the podcast, I'd go back there and make myself not sound like a stumbling idiot, but I was essentially asking how high R.L. Stine was when he wrote this, because it's just like, what the fuck? But I'm not going to go back, because I don't do that kind of thing anymore, because I don't care.
Then I remembered something else I'd read. Pollen, I said out loud. Bees eat pollen, and they get it from flowers. Excitedly, I flew up in the air and started hovering over the yellow blossom. I tried to open my mouth before I remembered I didn't have that kind of mouth anymore. Instead, I had a long, weird tongue. But how was I supposed to use it to get the stuff out of the flower? I didn't have a clue. As I hummed around in the air, I realized I was becoming more and more exhausted. If I didn't get something to eat soon, I was gonna faint. I started to feel dizzy. I hardly knew where I was. I became more and more confused. My brain got so fuzzy, I even began to wonder if I had actually been a boy at all. Maybe I'd been a bee for my entire life, and I just dreamed about being a boy. Slam!
Somebody closed a door. It says somebody dosed a door. Somebody closed a door nearby, and I was startled out of my mental fog. I swiveled my head to look. Dad! He was closing the garage door. Now he's walking across the driveway and heading towards the back door of my house.
Dad! I screamed. It's me! It's Gary! Gary, Dad, help me!
Hi, Gary, Dad said.
Dad can hear me, I cried joyfully. Dad, you've got to help me. My heart sank when Dad walked right past me and started talking to fake Gary. Ugh. That's when I changed my Twitter account to The Real Gary. And now all my followers know it's me and not the other guy that just pretends to be me. Getting some coffee. Desperately, I tried buzzing around and around their heads, looking like Andretti's lost one of his workers.
Looks like Andretti's lost one of his workers, my dad laughed.
He was swatting at me with his rolled-up newspaper. A near miss. I darted away.
Right, the fake Gary laughed, pretending he knew Dad was talking about Andretti.
Let's get the dinner going, my dad said. He put a friendly hand on my former shoulder.
Okay, son.
Sure thing, Dad. Like best pals, my dad and his phony son crossed the lawn and opened the screen door.
Wait, I shouted, wait.
Like a space rocket, I shot through the air after them. If I really put the speed on, I could make it through the door before it closed. Faster, faster, and... Bam! The screen door banged shut right on top of my tiny bee body. Once again, I sank into a deep pool of blackness. Where am I? What happened? Am I still a bee? Dazed, I fought my way back to the real world. When I was able to get my eyes open, I realized I was still a bee, a small, fragile, slightly damaged bee who had just narrowly missed being scrunched by a screen door. Now, I was lying on my back on the grass in our yard. My six legs were thrashing the air.
I was a klutz as a human. I'm a klutz as a bee. Oy vey, I wailed.
I tried to flip myself over. I've only been a bee for an hour, and I've almost killed myself. Twice! I suddenly knew what I had to do. I had to get to Miss Carmen's office and tell her what had happened. I didn't know if I could do it, but I knew I had to try. I let out a small grunt and with a huge effort flipped over on my stomach. Using all five of my eyes, I checked myself out. Both sets of wings seemed to be working, and all six legs were still there.
Okay, I told myself, you can do it. Just fly to the person-to-person office and go inside.
I flapped my wings and started to take off into the air, but I'd only risen about an inch off the ground when I heard the sound that made my blood run cold. It was Klaus, the cat.
The one remember before when I was like, oh, Klaus is attacking me, and then my cat was like, meow, and I was like, oh, it's perfect. That was seriously perfect. That was amazing.
With his long, sharp claws extended, he leaped through the air. I let out a squeal as he pounced on me, grabbed me in one paw, and began to tighten his claws around my body. As the cat's claws closed around me, I saw his hideous mouth gape open. Sting him? Sting him? The thought burned in my mind, but something held me back. Something told me not to use my stinger. I suddenly remembered something else I read in the big book of bees. Honeybees die once they use their stingers. No way, I thought. I was still hoping to come out of this alive. And back in my old body...
Oh, there's a random period there. That was very confusing.
And back in my old body. So, if using the stinger was out, I'd have to use my wits instead. With a loud gnashing of his teeth, Klaus snapped his mouth shut. He lowered his head, preparing to snap his furry prize. Me. At just the right moment, I burst out of his claws and ducked from under his gnashing teeth. I tried to shoot off through the air, but the cat whipped out his paw and batted me down. Klaus was playing with me as if I was one of his chew-up catnip mouth toys Chrissy always gives him for Christmas. With my last burst of strength, I spread my wings, shot up through the air, and flew as fast as I could. A backwards look out of one of my eyes told me that I'd left the surprised cat sitting in the grass. For 1 second, I experienced a wonderful sensation of triumph. I was indeed most triumphant. You did it, Gary! I crowed to myself. You, a tiny little bee, managed to fight off a great big vicious cat. I was so pleased with myself, I decided to take a little victory lap. I spread my wings out wide and began a big slow circle in the air. Whoop! Oh no, what was that?
Apparently it was an Italian, am I right? Because the onomatopoeia used...
Is onomatopoeia the word I want to use?
We must trudge on.
Oh no, what was that? I'd crashed right into something, but what was it? It wasn't hard like a wall or tree. Instead, it was soft and clingy like cloth, and my feet were all tangled all up in that bitch. I struggled to squirm free. I wiggled and pushed, but my legs were caught. I was trapped. Ha ha ha. The booming laughter made my entire body shake. I suddenly realized where I was. I was caught in Andretti's net. A wave of despair made me slump against the white netting. I knew exactly what would happen next. He would put me in his hives, and I would never get away. And that concludes part one of Why I'm Afraid of Bees on Dune Reads Goosebumps. Stay spooky, bitches!
Yeah.